Welcome to the Blackout Show, presented by The Guillen Grid, a show about the Chicago White Sox baseball, the good, the bad, the ugly. We'll debate what's working and what's not on the south side of Chicago. It's old school versus new school baseball. And most importantly, we're keeping all the receipts.
Welcome, welcome. With me, my one and only, my co-host, Jay. Jay, how you doing, man?
Great!
Love it. Jay's doing great. Game 7's on, going on right now in the ALCS. And what better not to have than another great Conrad of ours, another guy that loves to join our sandbox of White Sox content, the one and only, Todd Welter of Locked On Sox. And correct me, because I flat out forgot to look at the details again of the new platform you have on the writing business. But get us all caught up to date on what you have going on for yourself as well.
Yeah, I left at least the fan side of baseball side of things last month. So I'm now writing for SouthsideSox.com of the SB Nation. I've also joined ontapsportsnet.com for Bears content. Still writing for the fan side of Blackhawk site, Blackhawk Up, but you know, just wanted to diversify, do some other things. Try to branch out and really, really looking forward to it.
Okay, busy guy.
You know, when you have a daughter that loves to go to Disney World every summer, you got to find ways to afford those trips. And that's why you got to do these side hustles.
Did he say Disney World every summer?
Yes, my wife and daughter love Disney World. That's like the only place they really want to go for vacation, and especially they want to go in summer when it's like the surface of the sun in Florida, you know, dehydration, but you do what you got to do to survive and keep your wife and daughter happy.
Family man. See, me growing up, I barely got the Disney Channel, pal. So, you know, I'm happy you're taking people on the vacation every year, man.
Dude, I am the same way. Like, you want to know the first, I tell my daughter this too. I was 31 years old the first time I ever went to Disney World. And the reason why I went to Disneyland, like when I was in my 20s, was my sister lived in California. And, you know, I came out to visit her. So we took my niece there. Like, that's it. And they had a season pass. And even then that was astronomical. And trust me, it's going to Disney is not cheap, but you know what? They love it. And she's only going to be this age for so long. So you suck it up and you do a ton of side hustles to afford it.
Yeah. That's some OG Gonzo. You need to get it together. When you take an Apple and Soraya to Disney World.
I gotta get married first, and our marriage.
Here he goes.
Our marriage will be, or I should say, the wedding will be December of 26. So we have a year out. So Todd, I'll be 31 when I get married, and we're gonna see where life takes us from there.
So the honeymoon that we went, that's where we went on our honeymoon. It's actually an underrated honeymoon spot. Just a suggestion. It is an underrated honeymoon spot.
Yeah, I told Soraya that we're going to go to take 2 weeks of each of us will select our own destination. I'm still deciding where I want to go. I know she wants to go to Banff up in, I think that's Calgary area up there in Canada. I want to go somewhere tropical since she's choosing somewhere outdoorsy up north. So, but I'll keep everybody posted as we go along here. Todd, you actually had some interesting topics earlier today. I'm kind of jumping off of what you talked about. But let's just first begin with something nice and easy. What's your thoughts on Getz through his first two seasons so far?
Well, I think you got to break it down into two sections. I think you got to break it down to when he was pretty much trying to deliver on turning things around quickly and realizing that wasn't going to happen just like the owner what you know thought. And I think he tried to walk a very thin line by saying, well, let's just try some run prevention. Maybe run prevention will work. And then he constructed one of the worst rosters in the history of baseball. But I think that also he was able to leverage that into finally getting this organization to modernize. I mean, then he can walk into Jerry Reinsdorf's office and say, look, we do have to embrace, you know, sabermetrics. We do have to embrace using technology to develop our players. We do have to do all these things to basically be a modern, successful franchise. And I think he's done a good job of at least implementing what I would say the easy stuff, convincing Jerry that they've got to make this investment, you know, overhauling the international free agency. I know Marco Patti did the best work he could, and he could only sign so many guys, and then he's got to turn it over to the international, you know, to turn it over to the player development. But it just wasn't working out. So a lot of things needed to be changed, and he's doing that. And he's brought a lot of adults in the room. I think he also, this year, mission accomplished. The objective was find a core that you can move forward with. See what was left over from previous drafts, previous trades. Could that work out? You know, could those guys work out and could you move forward with it? And he did. And I think he did a good job of trading Garrett Crochet. I mean, we talked about it off the air, but you really didn't want to lose Garrett Crochet. But if you were going to trade him, make sure you get a haul, make sure you can get a timeline accelerating package. And they did. So I think 2024 GM Chris Getz was the sum of all our fears. 2025 GM Chris Getz, you know, arrows pointed up.
Yeah, I feel like I would definitely agree on at least the differences of the first two seasons. And really, I guess we'll back up a little bit, like with where you first began there. It was a tough time to transition because that transition of are we going to just do a rebuild or are we going to retool, right? That transition started there with Cease, and I felt like they were even behind the ball on that transition because that's the transition you probably should have started a year before then, right? Coming out of that, at least 22, coming off of that Cy Young season, like if you're going to go a rebuild route, you begin there where the value is that high, right, to make that trade.
I mean, Cease and Luis Robert Jr. should have also been traded at that trade deadline when they basically sold everybody off. So, yeah, I'm willing to give. And now that, like, it's not 2024 GM Chris Getz isn't totally, you know, he was kind of with one arm tied behind his back because he had an owner that said, I want things turned around quickly. So then he has to trade Dylan Cease for basically two guys with high floors, low ceilings. I mean, I like Drew Thorpe. I think he's got a chance to be a really great, you know, pretty good pitcher. But the problem is he's a spin guy that doesn't have a lot of velocity. So if he's not hitting his spots, he's nothing more than maybe a fourth or fifth pitcher. I mean, he's definitely got the chance to be an ace like Aaron Nola, but you didn't get that return like you got for Garrett Crochet, where you got like, I don't know, where you were able to aim
higher. Major league ready players right now.
Yeah. Yeah. Like you were able to get Kyle Teal, like you were able to get even Chase Mydroth. You were basically able to get, you know, you could have traded with, say, a Boston Red Sox team that had access top prospects that they needed a guy like Dylan Cease. Even though he was coming off a subpar season, he still had a high WAR, and everybody realized, you know, maybe just a few tinkering, and he'll be back to Cy Cease, and that's what happened. So I do agree that 2024 Chris Getz GM, one arm tied behind his back, but at the same point, he put together the worst roster in the history of baseball. I mean, you can't beat around the bush on that. You know, thinking Nicky Lopez and Paul DeJong would raise, you know, prevent runs, that was really far-fetched. But part of it was, you know, he had an owner that wasn't willing to open up his checkbook to turn things around quickly, and therefore he had to trade Dylan Cease for a lower tier of trade package, where, like you said, where he couldn't go get a Kyle Teal. He couldn't go out and get a Braden Montgomery, where you could really roll the dice. And you know, that's where he was at. in terms of that trade. And then like another thing is that Aaron Bummer deal. Like it was like that. That's another thing where I think he was trying to turn things around quickly. So he leverages a very good trade asset with a pretty good contract, left-handed reliever under team control, for basically guys that were going to be non-tendered. He could have gotten all those guys pretty much non-tendered, and look at the deal that he, how it turned out to be. So that's where I think, you know, it was pretty bad. But then again, you got to give him some grace. You got to realize that he at least covered his mistakes, and he did finally get this organization to move into the 21st century.
And you didn't even talk about the draft that season. You missed in you. Terms of, you in skipped. Terms of Jacob
Gonzalez or Hunter. Oh, Hagan Smith. Yeah, yeah. I, you know, that one.
Here we go. Gonzo's at it again.
No, I think it can be a thing where the two things can be true at once. And I think that's where sometimes Gonzo and I on Twitter miscommunicate sometimes. Two things can be true at once. You can be disappointed on them passing on Connor Griffin and J.J. Weatherholt and Jack Caglione. Although Jack Caglione, I'll admit, I was traumatized by Andrew Vaughn, and this was – they could not miss on this pick. They've got to get a very good major league talent, and I was like, we can't get a first baseman. We can't get a first baseman like that. I'll admit I was wrong, even though his numbers aren't the best. But at the same time, at least they doubled backed and mitigated it by getting Caleb Bonomer. That's where I think two things can be true at the same time. Caleb Bonomer has just, you know, he's got a high ceiling too. He's reached top 100 prospect status. He's got the chance to be a stud. I mean, on the other end, he is a little stiff, but at the same time, he looks very, very promising. But would I rather have Connor Griffin right now than Hagan Smith? Yeah, I'd rather have Connor Griffin. And yeah, I'd rather have J.J. Weatherholt. But I agree that, you know, and that, and I can see where the process being bad.
Because when you begin that rebuild with Cease, at that point, it's trading all assets, accumulating trading assets and accumulating value at the same pace as you can. And I don't think Jerry should be spending money while doing so. You got to hit rock. You got to bring it, scrap it all down, bring that value through the system and up, because it takes time to even get through the system. Once they get through the system, it's not just, okay, you're here, right? Because a lot of people look at one great season and then they're happy with that. But no, like development also happens in the majors as well. And yeah, that's going to take some time too. So, but when you're thinking about even the drafting at that point, I get where the comfort is in pitching because that's what they're good at developing. But at some point, you have to balance that out. And especially when you have a five-tool talent sitting right there, you got to grab that.
Yeah, one that you were significantly tied to. I mean, they were talking about it was Weatherholt. It was potentially Connor Griffin. And now those are two top five prospects according to MLB Pipeline. Now, sometimes they can overrate some guys. We know that. Sometimes they get it right, and you're right. And that's a guy, too, that Griffin would have been ready just as you're about ready to contend or just as you've started to contend. He's the next infusion of talent. So I agree. Process-wise, I don't think it was best. Hagan Smith, though, could still turn out to be an ace. I mean, he's having a great Arizona Fall League. And again, I just go back to they at least went back and got Caleb Bonomer, another guy who has a high ceiling. I think the only reason why he fell was because of the stiffer profile. You know, the athleticism might not be there. And he's proving that actually the White Sox are taking the gamble. And then they went, at least this year too, I think they mitigated and they went for a high, I think a high ceiling guy in Billy Carlson. He's already got the great glove. He just has to make that swing adjustment. If he can make that swing adjustment, you know, scouts are saying he could be at least maybe a step below Bobby Witt Jr. Maybe, I mean, if he could be Jeremy Pena, I've seen, you know, comparisons to that. That would be great.
That's a great comp for Carlson, Jeremy Pena.
And another guy that you'd like, Gonzo, I mean, Jaden Foskey again. I mean, those are, again, two big swings that they took for superstar talent. But I agree, you could have had four superstar hitters in your system instead of three.
And really, that's the point what I was getting to, is that transition from year one to year two. Altogether, I probably give it a C+ just because I felt like you missed a lot in year one. Mm-hmm. Granted, he's a rookie GM. Like, even making those deals with veteran GMs across the league, it's going to take time to build those relationships and work with them. But again, it's a tough grade, but I'm just being given them that criticism because that was a rough year one. However, for him just to make that or that transition from year one to year two, because you saw that buildup of that trade with Crochet. That was one hell of a deal that he made with Boston, and going to the draft, or not even just getting to the draft yet, because I totally forget. You got your real five selections. Granted, I thought Chane Smith was top of the list there. I thought that going into that selection, but even a guy like Vassell, you know, that next selection, to get two real five guys, hell of a job. And then you go into that draft and you get probably the best combo duo of prep hitters with the first and second round selections, with, like you said, with Carlson and Foskett. Jaden, yeah. Sorry, I'm blanking out right now. I'm tired.
I'm tired of you too.
I know. But that's a hell of a transition between those two seasons and the ideology. And then just even take a step further to totally wipe out the front office, overturn it. And it looks like it's making a drastic difference from front offices that we've seen in the past. Go ahead, let me take it away.
Yeah, and I think a C is a fair grade, actually. I mean, I know some people might not agree, but I think this is a fair grade over 2 years is, you know, again, the first year and going to, back to process, it was more of mandated, hey, we got to turn things around quickly. Well, it wasn't going to be turned around quickly, not with the lack of spending on that. So he learns from his mistakes. Not that, like, he does end up, I mean, time turned out to be really well to him in terms of that Miguel Vargas trade. I remember just absolutely panning that trade, you know, because, and I still think process wise was a bad trade, but overall, I mean, now it's looking like, again, the White Sox finished second in that trade, and I'd rather finish second than finishing dead last like it was looking at the time. But then, yeah, you're right, they do the transition, and yes, they really maximize that rule of five pick, because that was the only number one pick that they were going to get because of the new CBA rules. So they were, you know, going to be 10th pick. So they maximized actually their two assets to acquire really good talent. And then they take advantage of the Rays making a talent evaluation mistake. I mean, that's basically what happened with Mike Vassell. They determined that he can't make the team out of spring training, put him on waivers. They just pounce on it. Think about this too. For Chane Smith, really the hope was maybe you could stash him as a long reliever this year. And then obviously the injuries and the force, and he did earn the right to be a starter. I know they were going to give him a chance to compete for a starting position, but he earns the right to be a starter. But then he turns out to be your all-star pitcher. I mean, that's getting a huge thing. And then the guy that, you know, again, you were hoping he would just be a long reliever. The other rule five guy that you add does turn out to be one of your best relievers. I mean, that's really maximizing it. And not only that, for Mike Vassell, I know the FIP and the ERA didn't handle up, but there were some issues where it's like, if just a few things get corrected, his FIP is going to come down and it'll match up with the ERA. I mean, now you can move forward, and that's why you do get excited.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I used to love when Vassell used to come in a game, because that lets me know that Will Venable is trying to win the game. Now, before we even started recording, we were talking about leverage. Like, you got what we squeezed out of Mike Vassell in a situation to where he doesn't have reliever help. In his situation, when he's coming in, it's your job, period. And I think he did an outstanding job, especially with Venable using him for multiple innings, throwing the pitch count out the door. You're getting outs in an efficient way. Come on, we're going to run it back the next inning. Like, that's huge for a guy that you didn't even expect to be on your team.
Yeah, I mean, I think he threw the most innings out of relief. I mean, they just used him in everything, and, you know, they were using him as a closer. They were using him as a setup man. They were using him – well, technically, they don't have a closer setup. Like, yeah, opener, long reliever, getting innings, you know, try to save the bullpen. I mean, the thing is, and we were talking about that, what Mike Vassell represents is more of what the White Sox are going to need in this bullpen, because the other thing that I think Chris Getz deserves credit for is he already identified the right manager, not only for this rebuild, but hopefully to – transition into being competitiveness. This wasn't like hiring Matt Eberflus like the Chicago Bears did to, you know, get them through a rebuild and then all of a sudden you get the number one pick. This was getting a guy that can help you, you know, start to establish winning culture and then hopefully get you to be competitive. And the thing is, when it comes to Venable's philosophy of, you know, managing a bullpen, he believes in more leverage situations than straight up roles. So your best pitcher may be coming out in the sixth and the seventh inning, as we're talking about. But again, for this to work, then you're going to need like six closers. You're going to need guys that can get those high leverage outs. And that was the problem that they had all year long, was a lot of these guys were either inconsistent in getting the high leverage outs, or they just weren't capable of getting high leverage outs.
Mm-hmm. And I took a peek at the upcoming free agents, and I was looking at names like Pierce Johnson. We talked about Kyle Finnegan. Those are guys that you could just throw right into this situation where Will can ask you, I need you from the sixth to maybe the 10th inning to get me some outs. And those are the type of guys to do it. And yeah, we were talking about like 1 year deals. Sorry not to cut you off, but those guys are perfect for that type of situation.
Yeah, I sorry, I almost cut you off there. Yeah, I mean, I definitely think they need to add at least two or three bullpen pieces. And now maybe one of the ways that they can add it is through the Rule 5. They will be drafting second overall. So I don't think you're ever going to get another Shane Smith, 2 years in a row. But you are still in the area to get an arm that can throw with a lot of velocity. That a team just, it came down to, think about this. The Brewers, it came down to Chad Patrick and Shane Smith. There are other organizations that are going to probably have those types of situations where it's going to come down to two talented prospects. They got to keep one of them. So you're in a position to pounce on that, but they've got to definitely add, like you said, I would say 1 year deals, because I never want to see them ever spend as much money as they did during during the last rebuild, where they took the limited money, because I know, Junior used to say that they did spend money. They just didn't spend it wisely. It was very limited. They spent too much of it on the bullpen, didn't have enough for second base or right field. So I never want to see that again, but I do want them to make an exception. And there is going to be some money to spend. People think that they're not going to be spending money again. But if the budget is say $82 to $87 million, I think if you look at it in terms of what they have committed, they're going to have still $20, $25 million to spend to reach that budget.
Yeah, after the strike, I think that's when Jerry's going to open up the books with Justin. I just don't think it'll be, prior to that.
Yeah, I'm not talking about a major spending spree. I'm talking about that they'll have some money to sign some guys on 1 year deals. That I want to be clear on. They should have enough money to hopefully go and get a few better bullpen arms than what they did. Yeah. Like, I would like to see them sign somebody better than Bryce Wilson. I'd like to see them not have Cam Boozer be their top acquisition.
Oh, I'm going to be sick.
I do want to get to that, but before I get to the free agency part of this, I want to know, Todd, what do you want to see Getz and company target in their next selection of coordinators with the hitting and pitching side? Have you talked about anybody ideally that you think could be targets?
Yeah, I mean, I went over Jordan Lazowski on Sox on 35th has a great piece out. I think he outlines a lot of those guys that they could go get. I think it's Donnie Eckler, the Texas Rangers former offensive coordinator or whatever. I think he would fit in. I think it's just what you got to do is you got to get somebody that can help these guys get better at the big league level, because now I think they're into phase two of the rebuild. And part of that is still obviously adding more talent. I still think they have to add some superstar potential players through next year's draft, and hopefully they win the draft lottery. Brock Chwalski or Justin LeBron, come on, baby. That type of stuff. I mean, there's a lot of talented prospects in the draft next year that I hope that they can potentially get. But the next stage, though, is this internal improvement, making sure guys don't stagnate, making sure guys don't regress. Let's move forward. Let's not have Colson Montgomery be another Gordon Beckham, just a flash in the pan and then struggles, that type of stuff. So I want somebody that can help these guys be prepared every single day to go against the pitcher that they're facing and execute a game plan, because, they've got Ryan Fuller as a director of the hitting, organization. We're going to hit the way, pitch selection. I think that's a big thing that they want to do. Now you just need somebody at the big league level that can help execute what Ryan Fuller wants the team to do, what Will Venable wants to see the team do, which is obviously hit fastballs better. But then again, can you prevent, can you help make sure that there's no stagnation or regression? And again, the Texas Rangers, I had a couple of names that I know Jordan threw out and I just brought off the top of my head. The Minnesota Twins hitting coach, I know he worked with Fuller. If he's going to be available, I think he could work out. Although again, everybody saw how the Orioles faded in 2024. But just basically just get somebody that can make these guys get better as they go along and hit home runs. How about that? Let's hit some home runs, guys. I don't know about you.
Yeah, that was a question. I was hoping OJ would be here tonight, but I know he's overseas. So just a bummer because I know he might have some insight on it. But at the end of the day, I think it was Foul Territory put a reel talking to Carlos Beltran about his time as a coach with the Mets recently. But he said that organizations run into a problem when they put too many coordinators together. So, like, if you do have a Fuller plus another guy, like, the butting of the heads that could be of that is something to watch out for. That's why I'm kind of curious to see, you know, who are the personalities they're going to put in that room. Because you don't want one too many in that room, you know, talking different philosophy together. So I'm definitely curious to see, again, who's on both sides of it, who's going to be. Because you got Fuller and Bannister, you know, at the helm of this right now. So I'm going to be curious to see who's tag teaming this with them.
I think that's my favorite part of the Getz regime is that they brought guys that I've literally used on MVP Baseball 2000. Like, I remember using Brian Bannister on video games, one of the best changeups in PlayStation history, trust me. And I don't even have to touch the game sliders. Like, the name Barfield speaks for itself. Okay, and we're talking about complete baseball talent with Barfield. Now, I just feel like at this point, you said we're in stage two. I don't want the White Sox to try to get cute and go after like the big celebrity names, like the big fish out there. I want us to stay not so much organic, but stay simple, stay low key, if that makes sense. Because like we don't have a top echelon roster right now. Like we're not even putting up a lineup that can guarantee 3.5 to 4 runs a game. So we need to keep building, I should say, that chemistry, camaraderie. And like Gonzo said, if you got too many cooks in the kitchen, there's too many orders to be placed, too much stuff on the menu. And I feel like when you're building young baseball players, like we already got the analytics in our face. We don't need to, how could I say, break it down multiple times. Like, I'm gonna give you a prime example. So people want more fly balls, right? I don't like that when we don't have home run hitters. I want people to stay up the middle of the field, hit that 102 mile per hour ground ball right to the left of shortstop, right to the right of the second baseman. Like there's a lot of hits, a lot of success in that area. Like we didn't appreciate Todd Steverson, because when he was the hitting coach, we were a very productive lineup without using the long ball. We were top five in hits. We were one of the top teams in RBI. And with runners in scoring position. Now, we're at the bottom of all those categories. And that's with the injection of the new talent. So I just want us to keep the game simple in a world full of analytics and metrics. And it's great that we have all these numbers to our disposal so we can dissect and figure out, hey, this is what you're doing wrong. This is what you can do better. This is where you're having the most success. Like, yeah, I understand all of that, but I still want the game to be simple right now at this stage. That's just me.
Well, I think Ryan Fuller has a simple philosophy in terms of pitch selection. You know, don't be free swinging, basically. You know, be disciplined, try to take pitches. I think also comes down to roster construction. I mean, right now, you're right. The White Sox don't have the power hitters right now, but they should. I know Steve Stone has been advocating that for years, and I agree. I mean, when you look at the best White Sox lineups of all time,
200 like, plus home runs.
Yeah. And that the most successful seasons that you've had at Wrigley Field, 1993, they had a lot of home runs. They had some more bat to ball skill guys, but still, you had Frank Thomas and Ron Ventura crushing home runs. 2000, that's all they did was pretty much hit home runs. Magler Ordóñez, Frank Thomas, Carlos Lee, Jose Valentin, Paul Canerco.
Who's he getting hot in here?
Yeah. 2000, yeah. 2005. I mean, everybody talks about the small ball, and Junior would be here. He'd say the same thing. Yeah, they played smart ball. It was smart ball, but they hit a lot of home runs that year. You know, Paul Konerko hit 40 bombs that year. I mean, that's the thing. You should be in 2008. Something happened, though, I think, after the 2008 season when they just didn't make it in the playoffs because that's all they did was hit home runs, where they've just turned into this trying to be more of this bat-to-ball team. And it's like, that should be the complementary part of your lineup. You should have some bat-to-ball skill guys that can run the bases. Because, again, if you look back at the 2005 roster construction, you had some guys that ran the base as well, bat-to-ball skill guys that got on base, but you had guys that could crush the ball. That's the thing. So what you also want to see with those guys, maybe the bat-to-ball on the evolution is, you know, because we're valuing now more OPS, is can you hit balls to the gaps better? Brooks Baldwin, for example, was starting to show, can he, you know, and maybe he can do that more consistently. Can he hit the ball, you know, pull side to the left, you know, to right a little bit more over the heads of hitters like you are of fielders? Can he hit it to the gaps? I think that's what we want to see more. You know, can you get into the gaps? Can you get more doubles? Can you get more chances in running and scoring position? And if not, can you go first to third? That type of stuff. I think that's what I want to see more of.
Me too.
This team and that type of stuff. So when it comes to the hitting coach, I think the hitting coach kind of gets a little bit overrated, especially now with what they have, because they've got Ryan Fuller now in charge of how hitting should be done the entire organization. And I think that's so critical to have, that everybody should be hitting the same way at rookie ball to the major leagues, so that helps for development. And then you just got to have that added little ingredient, that guy that can make sure that they're prepared to play the game in front of them that day. And then, yes, if Ryan Fuller's not available to come into Chicago to do a swing session, that guy is there. And on that, if Ryan Fuller recommends something that's not working, that guy should recommend something. And then, yes, make sure that these guys are able to hit fastballs. Because I know I fully agree with Will Venable. You got to be able to hit fastballs in today's day and age, because that's what pretty much every pitcher is pumping right now. They're pumping velocity. You got to figure out how to hit it.
Yeah.
Pumping velocity with movement.
Yeah. And you got to be able to hit it. And that. And the only thing I will say is, just I would like to find somebody, though, to speak to your point, Jay, though, keeping things simple. Somebody's got to find a way to keep things simple for Luis Robert Jr. and make sure he doesn't get out by pitching down and in, pitching down and pitching down and away, because that's all they're doing to get him out.
Like the lower third of the zone, glove side for a right-handed pitcher against Luis Robert. Like, he has no shot.
Yep.
He has no shot.
And I honestly will take, if he is healthy for the few times, I'll take him still striking out looking if it's down, because at least he's not, you know, at least he's just getting beat by a good pitch. And I saw him get beat a few times. I cannot stand that he keeps still swinging at pitches away, down and away. It's like you can actually see the ball moving away from you. Stop swinging. And again, as you said, glove side down and in. He can't resist. He has to swing at it.
Yeah. And it's crazy too, because I know you was about to go, Gonzo, but remember COVID when Luis Robert had a great batting average? Just a great, we're not even going to talk about his power numbers, the great batting average. Like, I understand it's a small sample size, 60 games, but that Luis Robert is not the guy that's on my 40-man roster today. That's crazy.
Well, I mean, the 2023 guy, too, is not there anymore. I mean, he had a decent, you know, I think he hit like 263, 270, and that's actually, in today's day and age, that's a great batting average, because, again, batting average really doesn't matter. And, you know, can we make batting average great again? Sure, I think we could. But I've always believed that where batting average should matter the most, runners in scoring position. I don't care if you get me a hit or a home run with runners in scoring position. I just need something to be done that isn't an out. So that type of thing. But you're right. I mean, he's not that guy. I don't know if he'll ever be that guy again. And the only reason why he's still on this team is because Chris Getz is for some reason chasing this white whale trade package that will never happen. It's not going to happen. I don't see any team giving him what he's looking for. I just don't, because I think they have this view that he's always going to be hurt. He's always going to be inconsistent. And that's just how they're always going to view him. That's just how he is. He's only valuable to the White Sox.
Damn.
On that note, let's move on to some
targets. Did that hurt your feelings, Gonzo?
No, you just jumped off of Luis Robert too quickly than I wanted, because I wanted to jump on that. Off-season targets. Who wants to start this off?
So
I'll let Jay.
I've been having an issue with what the White Sox have been trotting out to right field. And I feel like if you want to inject home runs and slug and OPS, that's the position to do it. And I think looking at a guy, my guy from Canada, Tyler O'Neill would be perfect for the White Sox. 1 year deal. He could probably get you 20 bombs before the 4th of July, and then you could flip him and then get on with your life. But I feel like right field, me personally, that's where we go to create that OPS because the infield is locked. I mean, I don't know if Benintendi's in left. Luis Robert is coming back at least to start next season, I will believe. I don't know how many what avenues we have to inject OPS into the season outside of right field. That's just me.
Well, I mean, yeah, if you're talking about actually getting the ball over the fence, yes, you would probably want somebody to be upgraded over Mike Tauchman. I mean, at the end of the day, it's got to be a 1 year deal, though, no matter what you do in right field. Whether you're bringing Mike Tauchman in and saying, bringing him back and saying, hey, we just want your professional at bats. I don't think that's the end of the world, but I agree. If you want just actual home runs, you definitely have to upgrade over Mike Tauchman because he's never going to hit any more than what, like 10 on that type of thing. But at the end of the day, it has to be because you've got to keep that spot open for Brandon Montgomery, which I've got my fingers crossed. He's exceeding expectations and he's up by the trade deadline. So that the guy, I again, fingers crossed. I know I'm being,
crossing them too, Daddy-O.
I know I'm being a little too high. He's probably going to, probably May of 2027 is probably the best that I would say for him because I've never been a fan of actual rookies actually debuting on opening day. I just think there's just too much stress. It's always good to have them debut, whether it's mid-season or like in May, because then they out now that they get their own little day, that type of stuff. It's just a nice way to ease them in. I want Munetaka Murakame. I know I've been banging the drum for him. I think that could be your Jose Abreu of this rebuild. 25 hits bombs. You definitely need an upgrade at first base. I mean, again, I think they're fine for next year at first base if they go in again with a rotation of Miguel Vargas, Lenine Sosa, and Curtis Meade. That's fine. It's raised floor talent. It helps you out. But man, Murakami's got the chance to again give you those home runs that you need from a corner position. The problem is what is that? I mean, again, it could be overstated, but there's a rumor like it's like 10 years, 10, 20, 200 million that he's looking for. I mean, it's some crazy number, but man, it would be great to have him on the south side for the next, 5, 6 years.
I'd low key have one of his home runs in my backyard. I live
Yeah.
in Chicago.
You would. I mean, I mean, the only thing is I know some, and I did a show where I there's three because they're not even being mentioned. They weren't in the name that Mark, they weren't one of the teams named that Mark Feinstein came out with on MLB.com of who's tied to him. And I came up with probably three, I can only speculate, but the three speculative reasons, money. Number two is again, they really do want to provide a spot in the lineup for Sosa if they bring him back, because he could be traded. He's a prime trade candidate. But for Miguel Vargas, and maybe they still want to see, can Curtis Meade at least be a raised floor player? Because you still need raised talent, just as raised talent floor players just as much as you need superstars. But the third thing is maybe they did look at him and say, you know what, there is a hole in the swing. There are some scouts out there that are skeptical that'll be able to make the transition. And if you're going to be putting up a lot of money, the one thing about spending that we all forget about is if you spend it wrongly, then you've got a bad contract on the book for how long, that type of stuff. So it's just a fine line, but man, I just think he could be this Jose Abreu, this rebuild's version of Jose Abreu. Excuse me, Jose Abreu. I don't know about you, Gonzo.
So,
What are you looking for?
yeah, there's several things you touched on that I want to jump on here. I know I told you earlier I don't see a budget being spent. I would honestly, the first thing I would have done was given Kyle Teal an extension. That would have been the first thing I would have done. But from there, because that's probably about like a 8 year, $70 million deal. If you looked at what the Red Sox gave Christian Campbell, that's the ballpark of it.
Well, if you look at what, sorry to interrupt, but I mean, look at what the Orioles gave Masalo. They gave him, what, I think, 8 years, 67. So, yeah, if you're Kyle Teal, you're definitely looking for at least 70 to 75 million.
Exactly. I think there is an exception there. When it comes to free agents, I'm only overspending if it's a talent that shouldn't be there on the market, right? For me, that would have been, Justin said, right field. That's exactly where the talent is. It's Kyle Tucker. So if you want to be Justin,
man, if you don't,
if you want to sign that talent, it's right there in right field for you. That's where I would send. I would spend that money, put him there. I'm not sure if you saw it, Todd, but they actually had Braden Montgomery in center field lately, down there in Double A. So if you want to actually see how things are kind of being put in the atmosphere, you got Braden already playing both right and center. So, and again, that could probably push Jaden out to left field, depending if he even makes it at that point. But that's where I would be spending big money. But if we're just being realistic, I'll come back to center field. Because me, I'm done with the Robert experiment. You know, that might be a sign and trade.
Oh, I can tell.
That might be a sign and trade kind of deal. And if that's the case, I'm signing Cody Bellinger and going center field, spending the extra money that we would be spending on Luis to Cody. And let's just say guys come up like, you know, Braden and Jaden down the road. Well, Cody can play first base at the end of the day as well. So he can play both center and first base.
What about Miguel Vargas?
Yeah, we saw his ceiling this past season.
Miguel Vargas is a solid third baseman. But again, if you can upgrade over Miguel Vargas. And again, I love Miguel Vargas, actually. Mm-hmm. I've come to love him. I really respect a guy who puts in the work to save his career, because his career was going, like, it was definitely going in a direction where he was in Andrew Vaughn territory, where I was like, you got to move on from this guy. He's not going to salvage himself. And he really put in the work. He trusted the coaching staff. You know, he actually listened to the White Sox and said, okay, this is what I got to do. I'm going to do it. But we saw, I think, what he is. He's a nice raised floor player. I think you can, I actually think he's better defensively at first base than third base, because I saw him make some nice natural plays at first base. But you want more power, and I don't see him hitting 25 to 30 home runs. I see him hitting 15 to 20. I think he is what he is, so I agree with. I like, though, this is what I like what both you guys are doing, and this is where, and I talked with White Sox Dave on this on an episode of Lockdown Sox, that that's kind of what this offseason will be, a little bit frustrating. I like that you guys are thinking about shortcuts to getting back to being competitive. I'm with you. I love Kyle Schwarber. I love Pete Alonso. But, and these are guys that too, like, if you're just asking, like, Corey Bellinger, just hit me home runs, hit me doubles to the gaps, give me that stuff. Like, this is what we're all thinking. Just, we don't need the guy to complete the rebuild. We just want to get better, but and that can help us in the rebuild. But you know what? They're not going to do it. Cause again, Kyle Schwarber, perfect left-handed bat for right field. And I think his contract would age well, because all you're asking him to do is DH for the rest of his life. Just give me four at bats.
He could be a better Adam Dunn than Adam Dunn was for the White Sox.
Yeah. And you could live with that, but they're not going to even come. They're not even going to pick up the phone. That's going to be the frustrating thing. Pete Alonso is another thing. I think he's probably at best going to get a 3-year deal. You need a first baseman, at least, that's better. If you can get a first baseman that's better than Miguel Vargas, obviously he's not going to be better defensively, but that can hit you more home runs for 3 years. Awesome. Because right now the first baseman of the future, where is he? I don't see him. I mean, I like what, you know, Caden Connor's doing at the Arizona Fall League.
You talked about Jacob Gonzalez, the guy picked right after him was Bryce Eldridge, out there in San Francisco.
Oh my God!
And again, going back to process, one of the reasons why are the White Sox in this current state? Too many times under Rick Hahn's administration that they didn't go for a high floor or high ceiling guy. They went for a high floor. Where Jacob Gonzalez, he'll probably make his big league debut next year, but what's he gonna do? You know, he's going to be...
He might pull a Colson Montgomery. I don't know.
Well, that's another thing that I'm surprised with, that they haven't given him the Arizona reset. There's so many guys where it's like, give him the Arizona reset, as I like to call it. You know, pull him off, try to work with some things, some salvage. But the thing with Jacob Gonzalez was he was never going to have a high ceiling. His floor was going to be, he should get to the majors. And I remember reading up on him, and I actually was kind of excited about him. But then now you see it, it's like, even with the torpedo bat, he hits 244. I don't know about that. I'd rather have Sam Antonacci. At least Sam Antonacci has the ceiling to make batting average great again.
I mean, Sam's also, he has to get to double A too. So
I think he was at double A.
He'll get there. Well, I mean, like spend more time down there.
Yeah. Oh yeah. No, I agree with you. I'm just saying that like long term.
Most half of the first season was in the A's, and then, you know, same with Braden. Braden needs more time in double A. We saw that the second half of this season. So
I know I'm pushing him. I know.
It's okay. He'll get there. Okay, keep pushing him. But that's another point you brought up. Like if he does show that, you know, that the talent is where it needs to be, then to AAA he goes, and soon enough them will, you know, the majors. But I do feel like you're right. It's going to be probably another season beginning. Technically, they can do it the third week of April, because then service time. I think it's that third week of April.
Although we don't know what service time is going to look like in 2027.
Yeah,
you know, you have to pause everything. I mean, that's the other thing.
Everything's a risk, but I got cut off after Bellinger, so I had Bregman as an opportunity there if you want to have him fill at third base for the time being. That's kind of one of those other names that
I think that's going to put us in a bidding war, though, for Bregman.
That's okay. We got the money. We got payroll to use. $25 million. Yeah, these deals aren't going to eat up like too much of your future if it's just a couple of years. But those are the only two hitters I saw that intrigued me. Otherwise, I'm not spending that money. On the pitching side, again, last show I named seven guys that should be or that have the opportunity to be in the rotation next year. And again, there's a lot of innings to be had, and I think there's plenty of names to be in, you know, that we're going to see in that rotation next year. However, there is one name, a free agent pitcher that I would love just as a vet. To be your dog in that rotation, to be a mentor to these young arms of Schultz and Smith, Opor, McDougal, Brandon Woodruff.
Woody.
That's a guy I would love to see. Kind of reminds me of a Lance Lynn a little bit, but that's a guy that I would love to spend a little money. I think that guy will do wonders in your rotation. A lot of guys are complaining about opening day starter that we haven't had in, you know, over 2 years. That's a guy that would be a nice dog in your rotation.
So
before I go to the bullpen, skeptical. I'll let you react to me.
I'm skeptical about Woody's health, though.
And I am with that amount of injuries, and again, being a guy that used to cover the Brewers, I have no solid facts on this, but I with this many injuries that he has, I just got to wonder, does he take care of himself? Because another guy that had the same type of stuff was Ben Sheets. And I know for a fact he didn't take care of himself from because I knew some people that worked in the Brewers front office because I worked in the scoreboard operations and I actually talked to some of the lower end guys in the, you know, we would kind of interact sometimes. And they did tell me Ben Sheets never took care of himself. He never kept himself in shape. That's why he was always hurt. So I do wonder. I mean, I like your thinking, Gonzo. I mean, he's got the stuff, obviously, and if you're looking for a guy that maybe, you know, hey, Martin Perez was valuable even though he only made, what, 7-8 starts? Because if you are looking for a guy, I mean, they do need at least one veteran starter in this rotation, like you said, to still show these guys how you go about your business, because Davis Martin only has a year and a half. Sean Burke only has a year and 4 starts. Shane Smith only has 1 year. You still got to have a guy that says, here's how you be a professional big league pitcher. And especially, when you are bringing in up some guys, you know, I'm hoping Tanner McDougal eventually starts, you know, that type of stuff. So I like your thinking. It's just, I'm with Jay. It's hard to trust him.
Well, you have to be, the price has to be realistic. And because Woodruff has that health history, that's why the price is going to be a bit attacked down. Because if you're a guy like Cease, that price is going to go through the roof because he has the production that's there. He's going to get paid. I mean, he's looking at 30-plus. And I don't think Jerry's going to be spending 30-plus for a pitcher at this point stage of the rebuild.
Well, he's never paid for pitching. I mean, that's the only thing he won't.
But even at this stage, I don't think he would do it right now.
Yeah.
I'm thinking, what about a guy like Zach Littell?
I mean, just see anybody. I mean, they need a veteran. And that, again, like I've said too, like I like where you're going. I think you're on the right path. They've got plenty of young arms, but a lot of these guys will be coming back off of Tommy John surgery. I think they need to add two veteran arms, and not that, because they need the asset status. If these guys can perform, because they still need some trade assets. Because again, going to they need to be sellers again in 2026. I think we're all hoping that, hey, let's get to that 70 to 75 win mark. Let's avoid 100 losses once again. That's at least what I'm doing, but that still makes you a seller. And right now, they don't have much to sell. I mean, what do they have to sell?
I personally wouldn't spend money on pitching right now for the rotation.
Because you can find a one. I'm talking more like
guys that are deserving to have a rotation spot just to even get an assessment on. Because we got Thorpe coming back. McDougal should be on the 40 man soon.
He'd be better.
But I don't think you can.
Mason Adams is also coming up.
Those guys, Gonzo, to eat the innings. Like, we're talking about six.
It's for me. It's not about even the eating the innings right now. I need to get an assessment to know if these are guys I want or to trade.
Well, you can still get an assessment.
Acquiring value.
Yeah, I see where you're going, but I you can get an assessment in August and September too. I mean, that's all I'm saying.
But that's what I'm saying is we haven't had that assessment on some of these guys coming up. Like,
well, but the other thing is,
we haven't seen him. McDougal, we haven't seen him. Thorpe, hardly have seen him.
Like, so I think McDougal is the one that would be realistic at the beginning of the year if you're talking about that. If you want a clean slate for the beginning, because Thorpe and Adams are going to be coming off Tommy John. They probably won't be ready. I think I talked to Connor McKnight down at PodFest that, you know, these guys might not be, you know, Thorpe and those guys might not be ready until like June or July.
For the summer classic.
Yeah, so those are the guys that you might have to wait on. But again, if you want McDougal to have a clean slate and have a shot, or Shane Murphy, yeah, I agree with you. I'm just also saying, though, you need to sell some things at the trade deadline, and that's where if you spend a little bit on the bullpen, just on one-year deals, that's the other thing. I'm not talking multi-year deals. I'm talking one-year. One-year and maybe a club option. That's why you want to explore some starting pitching, because, again, if he has an Eric Fetty first half, you can leverage that into some pieces that you can use down the road. Kenny, you know, that type of stuff. That's just more where I'm talking about. But I like your thinking about Brandon Woodruff. At least get a pitcher in that $10 million range. Don't give me a pitcher in the 5 or 3, because I think Woodruff will still get a $10 million deal.
And I did have a couple names in the bullpen. Caleb Ferguson, the lefty. That'd be a good lefty to add.
From Seattle.
Yeah. And then Emilio Pagan is probably top closer right now in the market. I would definitely spend that money if you get a guy like him in here. You give him a multi-year deal, I don't care, because that's a guy that I feel he could be that closer that you're looking for. I mean, granted.
I was going to say, what's crazy is me personally, I don't see him as a closer. I see him as just high leverage, because he came in as just like middle to late inning relief. He was only a closer because Cincinnati needed him, because there was no more Alexis Diaz.
And that's another thing is I think they're going to put Peyton Paulette on the 40 soon as well, and that's another guy you can use in high leverage. Needs to prove it, but again, I think he has the stuff to prove it. For me, it's going to be interesting because you have Taylor, Paulette, and probably Vessel there. I'm just curious, are you going to leave Grant Taylor in high leverage the whole season? Or are you going to start to prep him into the rotation here later in 2026? I'm curious to see where that development plan is ahead for him.
So I've been talking about this on Lockdown Sox. I think it all comes down to what his arm, it really does. Can his arm handle it? I mean, that's one of the reasons why I think the moment that he had the little arm fatigue, they're like, all right, well, let's get down to his ceiling. And I think that's what is actually good processing a little bit. You got to let these guys' arms dictate kind of what can they handle. If they can't handle a starter's workload and be a high leverage reliever, great. I mean, because Grant Taylor was a second round pick, but then on the flip side, you have a mitigant. Tanner McDougal's arm seems like it can handle a starter's workload, and he can throw 99, 100 miles an hour. So develop him to a starter and that type of stuff. So I think what it comes down to is can Grant Taylor's arm allow it? If it doesn't allow it, then yeah, you got to just go into high leverage.
How many innings did Grant Taylor pitch this campaign?
Ooh, I have to look that up.
Well, that's another thing, because even when he did get brought up, you know, they got him back into it. Like, they didn't really give him a role, because that role was always jumping around. You know, he would get a spot start every now and then he would be in high leverage, and then he wouldn't be in high leverage. That was always a thing that frustrated me, because I'm like, me with that pitching mindset, I'm like, just give him a role and let him get into a routine. And that never happened, and that's what frustrated me.
So he gave me 36 innings this year. I think you probably try to bump that up with about to 60 to 70 innings.
Yeah, 65, 70, yep. All right. We are almost at the hour point. Time that, you know, here to wrap it up. Todd, please give us, or where can we find you for our followers listening right now?
Oh, yeah. You can find me on X, formerly Twitter, at Todd J. Dub, or at Locked On Sox. Subscribe to the YouTube channel at Locked On Sox for Locked On White Sox. We're here. At least I'm, you know, your team every day. I think I do, you know, five shows a week. Find Locked On White Sox on wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, hold on, wait. Before he goes, I just want to let him know that Jose Vidro is the best Montreal Expo of all time. I need to know, Todd, who is your best Montreal Expo of all time? Before we cut out here.
Oh, man, we're talking about this often. Are you talking about the most random Expo or just the best?
Hey, and tell me your favorite brewer.
Oh, my God.
Oh, man, are you bringing up Andrew Vaughn? All right, I got to add these two things. All right.
Oh, boy. Here we go.
Todd, right, you got a minute.
So for the Expo, for the Expos, it's obviously Vladimir Guerrero Jr. I mean, I got to see him actually hit batting practice when I used to work in Miller Park. It was just something phenomenal. Andrew Vaughn, like I said, he's doing great in Milwaukee. He's where he needs to be. He needs to be a supporting cast bat, but it was just never going to work out in Chicago for what they were asking him to be. They were asking him to be a core bat, and he just showed he couldn't be that. And that's fine. Two things can be true at once. He's fine in Milwaukee. He's got to still pass one more bar, Gonzo, and that is, can he actually hit in April and May? But even if he doesn't hit in April and May for the Brewers, that's fine. They've always had poor hitting first baseman. They just ask him to hit home runs. That's all they need him to do. So if he can do that, God bless him. The White Sox just added him to be something that he couldn't, and that is the man.
You know what? If that, with what you just said, Todd, if that was what this tweet was, I would have no argument with you.
Wait, can you show that again?
Yeah, I got you.
Let me see. Andrew Vaughn has figured out the growth. However, this could be just... Yeah, I just need to see a lot more unconvinced. Because if you do look at him,
tell me if his split stats are better in April and May, he'd be a plus hitter in the MLB.
Yeah, but it was never going to happen. And I think part of that was, if you look at his 2021 and his 2022, when he was asked to just be a supporting cast player, he thrived. I mean, you saw in 2022, hit 270. It's when they cleared out Jose Abreu, when they asked him to be more of a focal point in the lineup, that's where he didn't. And then those April and May, swoons just really killed. I mean, we know those seasons weren't going anywhere, but they really killed the seasons, like put them in the possession, where you're going to lose 100 games. And obviously there was a lot more of the reasons they're going to lose 100 games, but it was on the scroll. So that's where he's back now to just being a supporting bat. And if he's a supporting bat, and even if he does have a swoon in, a drought in April and May, the Brewers can live with that. They've got way more bats. They've got way other guys. So that's why. If he thrives, awesome. Great. Good for him. It was never going to work in Chicago. It just wasn't. It was bad process when they drafted him to begin with.
So I wouldn't say it was the wrong pick, but how they totally botched the whole Jose Abreu situation. Like, if you're going to draft that replacement, then you should trade him right away to get value for him. Or you keep Pito and you trade that pick of Andrew Vaughn. right after
the draft. Or you have Andrew Vaughn play right field in the minors a little bit before you actually have him play in the major leagues while you're contending. You know, so maybe he can actually do that.
The pandemic. But there were teams wanting him right away. Cough, cough, Oakland, A's twice, back to back years. Balloons are going off. That means we got to wrap, guys. But Todd, thank you for coming on with us. You were awesome. We're gonna have you again.
Yeah, I really like
later in the off season as we get closer to spring training. We have to have you on just so we can talk the shit again.
Right.
But that being said, Todd said it best. Andrew wasn't meant to be here in Chicago. Thank you for watching the Blackout.